As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. Needless to say, I spent my Sunday watching the Super Bowl, as did all of you, I imagine. Congrats to the Kansas City Chiefs. And, of course, their offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, who is now, you know, free and clear to come talk to the Washington Commanders about their offensive coordinator position. We're going to talk about that here in just a moment, along with a new name in that search. But we're also going to talk a lot about the game. We're going to talk about the controversial penalty late, the greatness of Patrick Mahomes, and we'll talk about Eric Bieniemy and where Washington is on numerous fronts going into this offseason with our guest, one of our staples throughout the year, former Washington head coach Jay Gruden. Join me. We did talk about the game to get that perspective. I also asked Jay about these offensive coordinator conversations. What, you know, he's been in them as a candidate and as a coach. What are you looking for? What's being discussed in these conversations? We got into that a bunch more, including I asked Jay flat out what's going on with him from his career perspective. So get to all that here in just a few moments on the podcast, which of course you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Also check out The Athletic if you're not already a subscriber. Give that a whirl. Before we get to Jay, and as I said, we really did tackle a bunch of topics, I do want to just address a couple things here at the top. First off, if you missed it on Friday, The Athletic, meaning myself and my colleague Daniel Kaplan, who does a lot of the business sports writing for The Athletic, we had a story up about the fact that one of the rumored owners, somebody who is definitely in the mix for the team, assuming Dan Snyder sells, Josh Harris, who is the owner, the managing partner for the NBA's Philadelphia 76ers and the NHL's New Jersey Devils, plus he's got an interest in an English Premier League, that he took a tour of the facilities last week. Basically, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, a week ago today seems to be the belief. We mentioned specifically the facility in Ashburn, but I've been told he was in Landover at FedEx Field as well. Needless to say, that's what you would imagine somebody who's about to make or potentially bid on this huge property would do. Nonetheless, it does show a level of interest beyond just, hey, this would be kind of cool, right? We still don't know where Jeff Bezos is at with regards to any of this, and people can continue to speculate that he'll jump in late with a big offer. But right now, Josh Harris is definitely, to me, the one to watch. Now, the Washington Post backed up our story and then added that a second person had also, or a second person or group had come through as well. We don't know the name, though, of that group. So who's to say who that could be, but I'll get more about the ownership stuff hopefully later this week and get a little more on Josh Harris. But you can check out the story on The Athletic, and specifically in that story, beyond the fact that Harris showed up, it has to do with the notion of the first bids. There was a lot of reporting that the bids that were that we've already hit the first bid process. Not actually true, but go read the article for more on this, or I'll discuss it later in the week as well. Basically, people needed to show an interest, but it wasn't binding. That is coming up, though, and that's where we may have learned exactly who is involved, including Jeff Bezos. So go check out the article on The Athletic. Now, I mentioned the offensive coordinator situation. So today is, I'm talking to you on Monday, February 13th. The NFL season 2022 season is officially over. And that means that teams who have been kind of, you know, in limbo with regards to certain moves can pretty much kind of move forward here as needed. In the case of Washington, that means getting a chance to interview Bieniemy, who, of course, you know, was unavailable basically the last 2 weeks once the Chiefs made the Super Bowl. And he was also waiting out the Indianapolis Colts situation to see if he was going to be in the mix for that. They are moving in a different direction, taking Eagles offensive coordinator Shane Steichen. So where does Bieniemy go from here? Well, the Commanders are interested. We talked about that previously. The Ravens are also interested. There could be other teams as far as we know. I know a lot of people keep saying, why on earth would Bieniemy leave Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and the team that's won the Super Bowl twice in 4 years to come here? Not just because the Dan Snyder of it all, but as we know, Ron Rivera's situation is very uncertain, whether it's because Dan Snyder could, after, if he were to somehow be around next year, decide he wants to make a different change, especially if Rivera doesn't have or has another non-winning season, or a new owner coming in just may decide no matter what happens, they want to make changes, which is often the case. And therefore, if you're a new coordinator, you could be a one and done in this town. Even if you sign a two-year deal, you're still on the unemployment line next year, getting paid, of course. But, you know, you want to coach, you want to coach. So it makes the whole thing tricky to say the least, except for the fact that this is Bieniemy is his contract expired in Kansas City. And despite the positives that you hear about him, obviously there's been some questions over time. That's why he's constantly a bridesmaid in the head coaching searches for several years now. There is at least some notion out there that Kansas City wants to move quarterback coach Matt Nagy into the offensive coordinator position. Now, of course, Nagy had that job previously. Then he went to take the head coaching job with the Bears, and Bieniemy filled in there. We'll see if that were to happen. But again, Bieniemy is not under contract right now. So I keep saying, and I firmly believe this, that only the people who don't have other options are realistically going to consider Washington of the type of candidate we think Rivera would want, and that's an experienced candidate. So far, that's been the case. Pat Shurmur, Ken Zampezi, Anthony Lynn, none of those guys have interviewed elsewhere. I think that's right with Anthony Lynn, right? Yeah. So now Bieniemy may, I mean, he's already interviewed with the Colts, but that's gone away. Potentially the Ravens, but you know, the Ravens have their own thing going on with Lamar Jackson. So that's why Bieniemy could be interested in Washington, even though it doesn't seem like he should be. The question, of course, would be, you know, again, do you want to latch on to a place that you could be out in a year? Of course, for Bieniemy, maybe it's positioned as a new owner coming in wanting to make a some sort of a splash hires him if he's like the best offensive mind on the staff. But that's still a ways down the road for anybody to even contemplate such things. We don't even know who'll be making those calls. So there you go. The other name, though, so Bieniemy will be seven candidates. We already have been penciling him in because we knew about that. Now there's an eighth, and that's somebody we've talked about before on this episode. That is former Ravens offensive coordinator Greg Roman. Of course, Greg Roman was fired after the season. The Ravens did make the playoffs, but were knocked out in the first round. Roman's teams crushed the ground game. Obviously, with Baltimore having Lamar Jackson makes a huge help, but in the 10 years he's been an OC, including stints with the 49ers and the Bills, His teams have finished top five in rushing 9 times. So we know that Ron Rivera has said he wants to really emphasize the run game for Washington. And with Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson, that could be a pretty good deal to get somebody like Roman. Of course, his offense is also not considered to be receiver friendly. And we know Washington has really good talent at that spot. So what are you going to do? There's also, of course, a Sam Howell factor. That seems like that could work with Roman because Howell can use his legs and is aggressive that way. But at the end of the day, we're still waiting. Here's what I've been told. My sense is that Roman is supposed to meet with Ron Rivera on Tuesday. As for Bieniemy, the Chiefs parade, Super Bowl parade is Wednesday. So I'm going to guess it would be after that. So hopefully, if we're all lucky, this thing could get wrapped up by the end of the week. No guarantees, not saying that's going to happen. But if we're lucky, maybe that is the case. And it's at least one box to check on Washington's to-do list. So that's where we are on that. Of course, as a quick reminder, the other candidates I mentioned, Shermer, Zampezi, and Lynn. There's also Anthony Brown, the Rams assistant head coach and a tight end coach, who is meeting with the Buccaneers and Panthers this week. And then you have Eric Studesville, the running back coach with the Dolphins. Studesville, as far as I know, has not met with anybody else. Brown's met with a few teams. Charles London, the Falcons quarterback coach, has taken a job with the Titans as their QB coach and passing game coordinator. So that's where things stand there. My take has been Zampezi / Shermer as the main guys. It's hard to think that you waited this long for Bieniemy that you're not that he wouldn't be the quote unquote favorite if he's interested. You would think that would be the case at this point. We'll see. And especially now with Roman in the mix, it's another guy who, would logically get consideration for sure. All right, that's it for me. Let's get to my conversation with Jay Gruden. Like I said, we'll start off with the Super Bowl, and then we get into a lot of the various topics. We also talked about Sean Payton, those comments that he made about being approached by potential ownership candidates for the situation here and what that meant or what that means for Ron Rivera, a whole bunch more. So here we go, Jay Gruden here on the Standard Room Only podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. We were fortunate enough to have Jay Gruden with us all season talking about the Commanders and things NFL. So, of course, we're going to wrap up the season with Jay as well. Jay, always great to see you. We spent a lot of time when you came on asking about what your setup was to watch the game. You're at the sports bar in town, whatever it is. The Super Bowl is the ultimate. What were you doing for the game? So before we get to everything else, what's the Jay Gruden setup like for a Super Bowl?
Well, first we had a big charity event. I went to at an airport hangar down here. It was pretty cool. I had two huge screens set up in the airport hangar, and I went there for pregame. And then for the game, I went to a local sports bar for the first half, and then the second half I came home because, wanted to see the game more intently.
Yeah, for sure. What was the what's the setup like in an airport hangar? What do they have, like food created and something to do with airplanes, or what's going on over there?
Oh, they had tons of food set up, a big line of food, pizzas and chicken wings and all that stuff, salads, cupcakes, whatever you wanted. Had 4 bars set up. They had tables set up inside there where you could sit down and eat. They had couches and they had 2 huge screen TVs. It was just a little too crowded for my liking. I went and bid on some silent auction things and got the hell out of there.
I hear. It's interesting. Like, I think that's always a dilemma, I think, for some of us when it comes to watching a game. It's like, look, you want to have fun, especially if it's, for me, I'm not having to work a game.
you want to enjoy it, have fun, talk to people. On the other hand, it's the Super Bowl. You want to be paying attention to what is actually happening. And sometimes the noise, even if they're your friends or whoever, can be distracting because you want to hear what is being said or you want to really focus on the game. Is that ultimately kind of where you got to, like, hey, there's too much other things going on. I just really want to focus.
Well, yeah, it was a friend of mine that I know from golf, and he invited me, and really I only knew my wife and about three other people there, and there's like 600, 700 people there. So, you know, they weren't really my friends.
Right.
So we did the right thing and came to our local place here, walking distance from my townhouse here, and then came back home for the second half.
All right, so you got to watch the second half. You watched the whole thing, but you got to watch the second half more intently. I guess it's what's your big takeaway on the Chiefs win, and I'm curious, like, as a football guy, what do you think flipped that their offense was just so dominant in the second half?
I think a lot of things. I think the protection they gave Mahomes against the vaunted Eagle pass rush was outstanding. You know, he did make some plays with his legs. He did get a little bit of pressure, but he is so good feeling pressure and avoiding it and getting the ball out and so accurate. And I think the field had a lot to do with it. I read about Hassan Reddick falling down a lot, which you could see him on the ground a lot. So they couldn't really dig their heels in. But, you know, that was a great job by Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid calling plays. The running game worked effectively. The short passes worked effectively. Everything worked effectively. Then we got in the red zone on some crunch downs. They had some creative plays, some movement, some change of direction plays that confused Philadelphia's defense. And they executed to perfection. I mean, I think they had four drives, four touchdowns in the second half.
Yeah, you know, a lot was made of that with the one touchdown in particular to Kadarius Toney, where he starts to look like he's on the far right side, looks like he's going to do some sort of, if not an end around, he's going to run, you know, he's going to run past Mahomes in that direction. Instead, he stops, turns around. The defense, you could see, is completely pointing to he's going to the other side of the field. Instead, turns course. Mahomes throws to him and he's wide open. Clearly that looked like a trend call that they had been going. I think I saw online, it was some notion that whenever Toney had the ball in the spot, it was always some sort of an end around or something going the other way. And here they went back. That seems like very impressive self-scouting. But what does that sort of tell you about how the Chiefs were calling plays and maybe what the Eagles were expecting to happen?
Well, I just think the defensive back played with bad eyes. You know, you just expect them to go across and run across the field with them. And sometimes when that happens, you have to avoid traffic as a defender. You have to avoid linebackers and go around, and you got to haul ass to get over there to get in position to cover him if he runs a flat route on the other side of the field or what have you. And then you lose sight of him because you're avoiding linebackers, and then Toney sticks his foot in the ground and goes back to the flat the opposite way. And they just, you know, the defender never saw him. He just kept running. As a defender, if you're covering a man-to-man, you got to play with great eyes and watch them and stick your foot in the ground and be able to redirect and make the play. But obviously, he was a great self-scout as a man-to-man beater and great play by the enemy and Andy Reid.
Obviously, having Patrick Mahomes makes life a lot easier. You know, we've talked about your era, you know, Cincinnati and here, and just, you know, you've got some good quarterbacks, but Mahomes is a whole other level. But Andy Reid, like, it almost feels like he doesn't get enough credit sometimes because of Mahomes. Like, what just stands out to you as a coach about what he's been able to do and how Mahomes just sort of accentuates the whole thing?
There's no arguing that Mahomes does things with the football that not many quarterbacks can do, if any can do, with his arm angles, his ability to escape pressure, his ability to make plays when the plays aren't there. That's what separates Mahomes from every other quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion. Play breaks down. Defense has great coverage. He'll scramble around and find Kelsey in a second or third window, or Toney, or whoever it is. Not many people can do that. But you also have to look at some of the plays that are wide open that they create, and the running lanes that they create with the play calls, the play to Toney, the play to Sky Moore, the touchdown. These are the touchdown to Kelsey on a little out and up down the sideline. These are well drawn out, thought out plays that are good scouting, good execution, and plays that are working because of the preparation that they use. So you have to give him a lot of credit for those plays, but you also have to credit Patrick Mahomes for the other plays that don't work that he makes work.
Yeah, for sure. I preach this all the time. I don't think this is me saying this to you is not going to be, you know, you're going to be, yeah, of course. Offensive line play, like you talked about this before, it doesn't, it, you can have all pros all in the playmaking positions, the skill positions, and a mediocre to poor offensive line, and it's not going to mean squat. But if it reverses course, you can, if you have the offensive line that's dominant as they were yesterday and not allowing a sack to the Eagles team that was on the verge of setting the NFL record for most sacks in a regular season and postseason combined, you can get by with a lot less stuff. And even though the Chiefs have Mahomes, who obviously is, you know, the best quarterback we've got these days, and Kelce, who's an all-time tight end, the rest of their skill positions are not that exciting. Pacheco is a seventh round rookie. Juju Smith-Schuster is fine, but like he's, you know, in Washington this year, he would have been like their fourth receiver. Basically, they have Mahomes, they have Kelce, but that line, that is, I just think that's such an underrated part of all this, that the, again, people want to get wide receivers and all and running backs. That's all important, but you got to have a line. And then, of course, again, it helps to have a guy like Mahomes, not to mention Andy Reid scheming everybody open.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you have the best quarterback, arguably, when his career is all said and done, he'll be in compared to Montana and Ben Brady. And then you have a tight end that's going to go down as probably the best tight end in the history of the NFL as well. That is a big deal. You know, that's a huge deal because the tight ends are different. When you have a guy that can dominate the middle of the field and can line up outside and can block and can do everything and have great feel, great hands. It's hard to stop him because he play man to man. You got to bring a safety on him. You see what he does to those guys. He plays zones. He finds the holes in the zones. So it's two of the most dominating players at critical positions in the NFL. And that helps a lot, but you're right. The offensive line did a great job paving the way for Pacheco. So yeah, it was just an impressive performance.
Yeah. I may ask you about the tight ends later, because in terms of Washington's draft, that's something that's, come up. Obviously the, it's quite, it sort of sucks that holding call on Bradbury, James, the Eagles quarterback, James Bradbury, in the last couple minutes is one that a lot of people are, of course, focusing on. And we understand why. It really essentially sealed the game for Kansas City, gave them a new set of downs. They were able to run out the clock more or less. And then they hit the field goal. What did you think of that call, both in terms of, I guess, do you think it was a holding call? And as a, you know, as a coach, like what level of frustration is there that they make that call? Or was it more frustrating if they didn't make that call, if you think it was a holding penalty?
Yeah, I think that could have gone either way, really. You can't blame the game on that play, although it was such a critical play in that moment. But, you know, the initial call looked like they were trying to do another change of direction play where they're going to look like Schuster was going to jump inside and run a shallow cross and then pivot back out. Bradbury kind of pulled his jersey out, and then when he was covered, Schuster tried to just wheel down the sidelines, and Mahomes just kind of threw it up there for, you know, hopefully get a touchdown or a PI, and they got the holding call. So the initial play was covered, but again, Patrick Mahomes buying time, ad-libbing a little bit, Schuster taking that thing up the sideline was a key play and a key decision by both those players to make the play and give the play a chance, and they got the call. And it was probably the right call. You know, you like to let it go in that situation when the game's on the line on third down, give Jalen Hurts a chance to come down and tie the game or win the game. That would have been awesome, but at the end of the day, where the referees were standing, you could see the jersey tug, and I think they had to make the call.
Yeah, I agree. I guess the only thing is, like, earlier in the game, Bradbury also seemed to hold Smith-Schuster on a third down. They didn't call, and I guess is, you know, people want consistency, whether it's, you know, it's like with the baseball and the strike zone. Even if I don't agree with what you're calling a strike, just tell me where it is, at least I can know. But I guess it's, you know, there's so many plays in an NFL game. There's so many things happening on any given play that I don't know how you hope for consistency, but.
Yeah, when you go back and watch a game film, I'm sure there'll be 10 to 15 other plays that were called or not called that the teams will complain about, and they right. probably have a significant gripe. It's that one was so glorified because of the situation that, you know, somebody's going to complain about it, right? I mean, there's no doubt about it, and the referees aren't perfect, but I think in that situation, despite the importance of that play, I do think there was a jersey tug there, and you got to make the call because you can't pull a jersey.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to ask you about Jalen Hurts, but I'll assume you were just impressed as many of us were, you know, biggest game for him. And, you know, he could have arguably been the MVP, even a losing effort, but I want to ask you something else instead. So Jalen Hurts scores three touchdowns. He gets a couple of short yardage plays. And in on some of those, there's the Bush push situation that the Eagles have really leaned into in ways we have not seen before, meaning You have the players line up behind the quarterback on these short yardage plays, not just like a running back, but like a convoy behind him, such that when he gets the ball, they're legitimately pushing him forward. And one of my colleagues, Kalen Keller, wrote about this earlier in the year about the Eagles sort of mastering this. I don't like it. I don't know why I don't like it. It just feels weird to me. It's in the rules. It just feels awkward because the whole point is supposedly the lines are going head to head and who's going to win that battle. And instead the offense is saying, no, we're going to put more people in our side of this tug of war and just push him forward. But I don't know. You tell me, what do you, I mean, it's been there for years and nobody does it the way they are. What do you think of that play?
Yeah, we did it in 2013 at Cincinnati when we were backed up at our own 1 foot line against Buffalo. We put two big guys right behind Andy and trying to get out of our shadow of our own goal line. And it's a effective way. You know, I watched rugby the other day for the first time with some buddies of mine from Ireland. And we watched Ireland against France and it looked like a rugby scrum. You know, these guys are getting low and they're just digging down there and they're trying to get a yard. And it's hard to stop, you know, especially when you have a quarterback to squat 600 pounds. I don't know how you stop it, Nate, and the Chiefs didn't stop it. So it is something that I think the NFL may look into to try to change that rule because of the difficulty to stop it. But it is part of the rules, and if you can do it and you have a quarterback to squat 600 pounds, I'd do it too.
Well, and this was like the primary debate I was having at the party I was at with a couple of my buddies, and I couldn't articulate why I didn't love it, but it just feels, again, it's obvious. It's been sitting there. You could do it. The Reggie Bush did this famously behind Matt Leinart when USC won a national championship, but that was a long time ago, and nobody's does it. And yeah, it doesn't. I agree. I feel like the league is going to have to look into this because I don't understand why there's so many obviously big quarterbacks. You couldn't maybe do this as easily with Taylor Heineke, but like, you know, a Carson Wentz type guy, he's already 6'5". He's already going to like have an advantage and just like push him from behind with like a couple of tight ends or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It just feels
the key
wrong.
Also is you got to have a good center too. And Kelce is as good as anybody at executing this. He can get low. He's not very tall to begin with.
Right.
And he's the initial pop. You know, you got to get him. And then the guards got to come down and make sure they secure the gaps. And then you just push it on in there. And I've seen some teams try to not work from time to time, not very often. But, you know, I think, who was it? Buffalo in the end zone against Minnesota when Josh Allen fumbled. I don't know if it's the same formation and all that stuff, but there have been some issues with it. But very difficult to stop, like you said, and I think the NFL will look into it because it is, in my mind, a significant unfair advantage on those third and ones, fourth and one plays when you have a quarterback like Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, no, it's definitely fascinating for sure. All right, let me switch to the Commanders. If we have time, I will see about maybe a couple other questions about the league as a whole and from that game, but I do want to get some Commander stuff in, and I don't have Jay for his, you know, unlimited amount of time. You mentioned Bieniemy as helping part of this, obviously the Kansas City coaching staff. He has been rumored to be in the mix here for Washington for the offensive coordinator position. Looks like the Indianapolis Colts are going to hire the Eagles offensive coordinator Shane Steichen. It sounds like that announcement will come down on Monday. And Bieniemy was in the mix for that to some degree. So it could come here, but here's what I wanted to ask you. We keep having this conversation with Bieniemy. There may be a lot of different variables as to why he has not gotten a head coaching job, but one of them seems to be he doesn't call the plays, that this seems to be something that is holding him back, even though there's been other coordinators at times, including even at Kansas City, that haven't done that. You've been in the situation where you've been in the play caller, you've not been the play caller. Can you explain as best you know, what is Bieniemy actually doing? If he's not quote unquote calling plays, like what is he doing that would make you think, hey, this guy is going to be, he's capable enough to take the offense over full bore, or what's there that might be the reason for people to be hesitant if he's not quote unquote calling plays?
Well, he's been in every meeting for forever with Andy Reid, and he's been in the installation process. You know, I always said that, you know, it doesn't matter who calls plays because really, I mean, it does matter. Don't get me wrong, but you have situations already scripted out. You have your third and one to the twos. You have your third and two to five. You have your third and six to 10. You have your red zone. You have your goal line. You have your short yardage. You have your play passes on first, second down. You have them all ready to go. You have your top five shot plays, whatever you want. So you have those ready to go. So it's a matter of your preparation, what you did in practice, how you're going to attack the opposing team, already ready to go. Here's my top five, third and 2 to 5 calls. Okay, it's third and two. Let's work Kelsey. Okay, here's our top five inside the five plays. Let's run the play to Tony. You know what I mean? So those guys are already scripted out. So Bieniemy has been a part of all that process. He might have put some of those in. Andy Reid might have put them in, whoever put it in, but he's in that process, understanding why they put them in, why those plays would work in those situations. And I think he could carry that over to calling his own plays. Obviously, I'm sure he calls some plays, just not all of them.
So how does that work, though? I mean, you've been in the situation where, and feel free to correct me where I'm wrong here, but like, you've been the head coach and the play caller, you've been the head coach but not the play caller, you've been a play caller when you weren't the head coach. So what's that line between, like, how is it that, like, sometimes Andy Reid might call a play, but sometimes Bieniemy might call a play? Because I'm sure you jumped in at times when you weren't the quote-unquote play caller and thought, well, hey, we need to do X. So how does that work? That sometimes he might be calling plays or sometimes he's not. How does that work?
Well, you got the headphones on. You're in consistent conversations with your staff. Like, I would talk to, Coach Callahan when we wanted a good run play. You know what I mean? What run do you like here in this situation? He'd say we run a bunch right, Z left, Wanda, whatever it might be. And we'd call that play. So Callahan would call some of the runs. Coach Furster, when he was our line coach, would call some of the runs. You know what I mean? And then when it was third downs or a key situation, those were already ready to go scripted. Usually Andy Reid will call those critical ones. Maybe it's Bieniemy calling the running game. Maybe it's Andy Reid calling the passes and so on and so forth. So only one guy can call a play for the quarterback, but that guy who's talking to the quarterback does get information from each member of the staff depending on the situation and the call.
Is part of that all, I think we've talked about this before, but the idea of the play calling, it's not even so much like what's your level of creativity. It's like, what's your level of creativity in the heat of the moment that you're playing for the Super Bowl and you've got to make a call here and you have 30 seconds to figure, or less than 30 seconds to figure it out. But how do you know that until you actually do it, that whether or how a person responds in the heat of the moment? Is that part of the uncertainty with, like, when we say somebody isn't the quote unquote play caller, it's,
yeah,
they don't know what they'll do in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a tough thing. You know, the critical situation plays, you know, and actually when you're talking about a game like the Super Bowl, any game, every game is big. You're going to have lots of critical situations. Somebody's got to pull the trigger, make the call. And that's usually the main guy, the main play caller, you know, but throughout the course of the game, you know, you might be on the bench, defense might be on the sideline or on the field. And you're talking to your staff, hey, what runs do we want to get to on the next drive? Hey, what play action pass do we want to get to? Third down, what's our next third and five play, whatever we're going to get to. So you're kind of previewing the next drive before the drive happens. Now, situations could change, like field position could change. You might get sudden change and be backed up, or it might be get sudden change and be in the red zone. So your thought process may have to change like that. But for the most part, you're trying to preview your next set of play calls before they happen so you can go to them fast. You don't want to just, okay, it's third and five. Oh, crap, now let's look at my list. What play do I want to get to? You want to be prepared so you get it out quick. And that's one thing I think we did good as a staff here. We had very limited delay of game penalties, if any, if I can recall, not many at all. We try to get the plays out fast so the players can get them in, quarterbacks can get them in, think about the audibles they might have to get to, or how they're going to attack the defenses, where they're going to go to with the ball. So, it is a tough deal, but you try to, you know, communicate with your coaches and get the best possible personnel group out there and the best possible way to attack a defense.
How many offensive coordinators did you hire? Obviously, there was O'Connell. How many did you ultimately hire when you were here?
Sean was the first one, obviously. I wanted Sean because he had knowledge of the Shanahan system, and we're trying to get RG3 ready to go. So we kind of intermingled our terminology, so we didn't totally start from scratch. Our run game, we kind of kept similar to what the Shanahans did. Some of the play passes we kept similar. I kind of brought in more of the West Coast flavor in the passing game. I thought we were a little bit better in that regard. But and then when Sean left, that's when I think I hired O'Connell.
Okay. So what I was going to – and obviously, you know, McVay was here. And plus, as we've discussed before, he comes from the Gruden tree. He, you know, he's not a Shanahan tree guy adjacent. So maybe this isn't the right – maybe this isn't the exact situation to ask, but – Washington has interviewed 6 people so far for this OC job. One of those candidates has already taken another position. Bieniemy would be the 7th. What are you looking for in these meetings, in these conversations? Assuming these are real interviews, like, you know, to some degree, we all get it. Everybody is not exactly on the same level when they come in for that interview. They may already have some favorites, and some people, they just want to get to know better or learn something from their current situation. But what is the thing in these meetings, if they're really up for grabs, that a person as a coach who's making these calls is looking for? Is it like you want to hear from an Eric Bieniemy, hey, it's 3rd and 8 from your own 46? What are you calling? Or is it like you want to just get their sense for their personality? What is it? What are you looking for the most in these conversations?
Well, but a little bit of everything, but you also want to find out how they would utilize the personnel that you have. And they want to, are they going to match your identity? You know, what's Coach Rivera want to be like? Because he obviously, there's been talk that he wants to be a 2-for-1 run pass ratio guy. They want to be a smash mouth football team. Does Bieniemy fit in that category? Do their personalities match? You know what I mean? Do they have the same beliefs? Obviously, there's going to be different ways to attack a defense. You know, empty, 2 tight ends, 3 tight ends, but they have to fit the personnel with the plays that they like to run, and they have to match what Coach Rivera wants ultimately, and they have to prove that they can motivate players and make average players good and great players even better. And that's the most important thing a coach can bring to the table is, how is he going to get the most out of the players that the Washington football team has, or Commanders, not the Kansas City? They don't have Patrick Mahomes now. All right.
No, you know, no, they don't.
They don't have Travis Kelce now. So some of those plays of Travis Kelce, it ain't going to work. So, you know, they got to be able to adjust and utilize personnel groupings, and obviously match the identity that Coach Rivera has. And that'll be the key.
Well, let me ask you this. I'll put you a little bit on the spot to a degree. So, again, we don't know exactly what's going to happen here. My assumption at this point is, and all along has been, Rivera would hire, assuming that any of these candidates are willing to come to Washington, knowing the uncertainty that's going on with ownership and Rivera's own status accordingly, the ones that stand out the most likely to me are the experienced guys. That would be Ken Zampezi, the quarterback coach who's already here. That would be Pat Shurmur, who's been offensive coordinator 100 times and a head coach twice, and Bieniemy. I mean, they've waited all this time, presumably, to talk to him. He's obviously, you know, he's been with Kansas City and all that. So you would think, to me, those would be the three leading candidates. No disrespect to the other ones. They just, you know, lack the experience that I would think Rivera is looking for. For you, does any of those three, based on your, you know, you, I'm sure, have known these guys to a degree, or at a minimum, you know their reputation, their what they do. Any one of these three stand out to you the most that you think would make sense? And just to be clear, you know, again, Sam Howell at the moment is the only quarterback here. So you've got a really inexperienced guy. You've got these playmakers at receiver. The offensive line's uncertain. You mentioned the run first kind of a thought. Based on all these things, is there any one of those guys that for you kind of stands out the most?
Well, Bieniemy would be the one, probably. But if I'm Eric Bieniemy, why would I leave Patrick Mahomes for a lateral move just to call plays? You know, he's won another Super Bowl, and they're favorites to win next year's Super Bowl. Now, if I'm Andy Reid, and most coaches don't let coaches go laterally, but you do have Matt Nagy on staff who obviously would take the place of Eric Bieniemy, and I think they'd be fine. But I don't know. I think with those three names, the most exciting for Washington would be Eric Bieniemy, because obviously the success they've had and him being with Andy Reid. Ken Zampezi's been a lot of different systems. He's obviously very smart. Coach Shurmur, obviously, he's been around the block a few times and made calls in critical situations, and would be fine. But Eric Bieniemy, I think, would probably be the most exciting for Washington fans.
Yeah, I mean, the lateral move thing is odd for sure. I guess it really does come down to, you know, what does somebody want to do with their own life? But also, does the idea that you would get to really run the offense here potentially change how perception of how people view Bieniemy when it comes to the next round of head coaching jobs? I don't know. I mean, yeah, that would be.
But the also situation is, what's the job security like? I know he'll probably get a 3-year contract, which is great. But is Coach Rivera on the hot seat next year? Do you want to leave Andy Reid, who could retire the next year or two, and that could be your job? You right. know, I just don't know why he would leave to go to Washington, who, let's be frank, I mean, if they go 7-10 next year, is Coach Rivera going to be around and they get a new owner? What's going to happen there with all the, you know, that maybe he thinks he could be the next head coach at Washington if that happens, who knows? But it would be a real stretch for me, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, to leave Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes, and Andy Reid to be an offensive coordinator in the same position just to call plays at Washington into a rookie quarterback, a second-year quarterback who's played one game.
Right.
Right? I know they have good skill positions and all that, but that'd be a stretch for me. But who knows? Maybe he wants to branch out. He's probably got a lot of money saved up in a bank and wants to go out and make a name for himself. But I think he's made a name for himself in Kansas City. I think everybody knows who Eric Bieniemy is. He's done a great job there with that offense and with Andy Reid. But who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, and Washington isn't the only team. The Ravens apparently have shown some interest, and there could be some others as well now that the Super Bowl is done. The season is over. We'll see what other teams are, you know, maybe are waiting to do. There's, you know, still a head coaching job available in Arizona, not for Bieniemy per se, but just what's the ripple effect from any of these hires. Did you see the comments that Sean Payton made the other day regarding Washington's situation?
No, I did not.
All right. So Sean Payton, of course, just gets hired by Denver. It was rumored to be open. It was rumored to be in the mix for various positions. And even during the process, before he took the Denver job, there were some reports out there about a sneak. There's a team out there that if they get their ducks in a row, could be in the mix for Sean Payton. And Rex Ryan goes on TV and says, oh, I think Washington could be that team. All right. It never made any sense from a timing standpoint because Snyder's, I mean, Sean Payton's not going to go to a team with Dan Snyder as the owner. And the team's not getting sold in the time frame in which these jobs are being available for Sean Payton. So anyway, he goes on with Mad Dog Radio on Sirius the other day, and he was asked about the process leading to Denver. Were there other opportunities that he considered? And this is what he said, quote, everyone's waiting to see what happens in Washington. There's some interest from potential ownership groups that are going to be bidding on that have currently bid on that team that were getting ahead of the game, saying to him, hey, if we get awarded this team, would you ... And then he kind of veered off to another direction. So he basically was saying that ownership groups who are potentially bidding on this team or have bid on this team hit him up to say, you know, well, what would you think? Again, to me, the timing just didn't make sense if he wanted a current job to, you know, as well. What, now that I've just sprung that on you, he's also inferring in there that Rivera's going to get fired if one of these other guys gets the job. What do you think of a current coach saying something like that about a job that's currently occupied?
Yeah, that's you know, it's I don't know. I don't think that's the right thing to do. Try not to comment on jobs that are already occupied by somebody else. That's kind of a coach's motto, I guess, mantra, I guess, so to speak.
Right.
So, you know, I'm sure there is some truth to that. I'm sure the owners that are bidding on this team, they're bidding billions and billions of dollars that before they, you know, get awarded the team, they want to try to check and feel the, you know, the scope of some other coaches that they think can lead the team if they don't like what the situation is right now in Washington. But who knows? I mean, there's probably four or five people trying to bid on this team, and nobody knows who's going to get it. Maybe it was just some slappy that, you know, offered like $2 billion, had no chance and called them. Who knows?
Right.
You know, I mean, it could have been a lot of different things, but you know, it's a tough situation. You know, I know Coach Rivera's in a tight spot right now. He's got to win this year probably, and the ownership changes. Just another obstacle a coach at Washington has to overcome to try to get some victories there.
All right, that's one thing I've felt throughout the whole year as we've been just talking. I mean, it's, you know, to some degree, it's unusual to have the former coach talk a lot about the team with the coach that replaced him to the degree that you have, but you know, you're a pretty candid and honest guy, but it also has felt all this time of you have some sympathy for Rivera's situation, because no matter what he's doing, it does feel like Dan Snyder has been a little more hands-off to a degree than he maybe was in your era. And perhaps that's because he's been dealing with congressional investigations and all these other things. But that said, I mean, you're always arriving here with one hand tied behind your back, in part because he's the owner. You can't necessarily go get everybody you want because everybody knows, you know, like Russell Wilson last year. I know it didn't maybe work out in Denver, but he wasn't going to come here. But he's got options. Why would he come here? So it felt like you always have had some sympathy for Rivera, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough deal, man. You gotta have support from everybody in that building. from top down to be successful in the NFL. And if you don't have that support, it's not that fun to go into work. It's difficult to succeed, almost impossible to succeed. And hopefully they get that situation rectified in Washington soon, because, you know, it is one of the top franchises in the NFL, and they should be, you know, compete for titles every year. And that's the feeling that everybody has there. But unfortunately, it hadn't happened.
That was part of the other thing Sean Payton went on to say, that he would it was his father, his uncle, somebody in his family was a big Washington fan when he was growing up. And he recalled being last year the Saints played in Washington at FedEx Field. And he was like stunned to look in the stands and see like a third of the crowd was rooting for New Orleans. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of people there. And like, it's, a, you know, it should be one of the destination spots. And that is what's going to be interesting to see if they do sell. What is the transformation? How many people will come back? And all that. I guess let me just ask you this: where are we at with you? The season's over. You know, you've been obviously a long time coach in this league. I know you've expressed the idea of, you know, still being down to do more. You worked. You did some consulting with the Rams this year. Where are you at?
Right now I'm still with the Rams technically, but we'll see if that's going to happen again this year. I'm going to talk to Sean here in the next week or two and figure out if we're going to continue with that process. But other than that, I've got nothing really going. You know, I think these guys are looking to hire new blood, and, you know, the exception of Washington with, you know, some of their candidates for coordinator. But, it's just hard. You know, my last two stints weren't very successful. Jacksonville, we were 1-15. And my last five games at Washington, we lost. So it's not like I'm a hot commodity, you know. You know, I had 10 quarterbacks to deal with the last 2 years that I coached. But, you know, I'm happy where I'm at. I got to play a lot of golf, and hopefully I can be a part of somebody's staff in whatever role that might be, just to, you know, keep my hands in it. But enjoying life and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like we need to hold a bake sale for you or a pity party, because it feels like, you know, your world is doing pretty well. But obviously, this is what you've spent your life doing, is focusing on these things. And one thing I always think is so curious with football coaches is you see oftentimes, like, you look at somebody's resume and they will have been a linebacker coach, or like with Matt Patricia with the Patriots. Like, obviously, it didn't really work out, but as a guy who was like a defensive coordinator and they had him calling plays, Juan Castillo, the tight end coach here in Washington, was the offensive line coach elsewhere. In other words, that coaches do different jobs. And you see this a lot of times with like the quarterbacks. Sometimes I'm like, wait, why is this person a quarterback coach? I'm not saying they don't know anything, but they haven't been reared in that. You clearly have been reared in quarterbacks. You played the position. This is what you've done. It seems like, independent of whether somebody thinks you should be a head coach, whatever, like, you should be somebody who is with a team helping their, at a minimum, their quarterback situation or their passing game or whatever. Is it just for you, like, at some point it's like, well, I've already reached the mountaintop in terms of position of a coach. I don't want to necessarily do some of these other things, or what, like, I don't know, if you put it out to the universe and, you know, try to manifest it, it seems like we could get something going here. No.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple issues there. I mean, who am I working for? You know, the reason I like to work at LA is because I know Sean, and we go way back, and I know what kind of guy he is. You know, to take a job at somebody I don't really know and a staff I don't really know. Coaches are very sensitive. They don't like to have consultants come in there and they feel like they're taking their jobs and all that stuff. So the communication isn't that great, but it has to be a great staff, people that I kind of know. And unfortunately, I don't know really a whole lot of people. I know Sean, I know Kevin O'Connell. And I've made acquaintances with a couple other people, but haven't really worked with a ton of people. You know, I was offensive coordinator 3 years at Cincinnati, 1 year at Jacksonville, and obviously head coach at Washington. And that's kind of my only group to the people that I know. So a lot of it is who you've worked with, who you know. If you're a young kid coming up, they want the new blood coming up right now. And deservedly so. There's been a lot of young coaches that have done a very good job in the NFL. Offensive coordinators, quarterback coaches, head coaches. I'm 55. I'm not really that old, but you can see what the trend is in the NFL and who people are hiring.
Fair enough. Well, look, I mean, you know, hopefully if you want to get back in there, hopefully the NFL world will figure out a way to make that happen. I saved the best for last, of course. Rihanna, did you have any thoughts on the halftime show?
It was entertaining. I'm not a big Rihanna fan. I didn't realize she had that many dang songs. She was up there. I'm afraid of heights. I could have never done what she did. That was
dude,
crazy.
Seriously, like no I'm chance.
Saying, I mean, he trusts those wires being that high. I mean, I don't understand that.
And but, she's pregnant. Like it would be bad enough in general, but like we find out, of course,
if I was a woman, I would have dropped the baby on stage up there. I would have been scared to death. But I thought she was very good, man. She still has those pipes, and she was impressive.
Yeah, I mean, like it was odd because obviously she wasn't moving a lot per se, and we understand now why. But then you're like, "Whoa, wait a minute! She's still doing hanging up on this stage." Oh my god, like that was crazy. I'm not a big fan of heights. I'm way out on that, and the fact that she's having to perform to a degree, and she has such a presence, and she's with child. Oh my god.
Yeah, that was impressive because there's no chance I would have done that. And I'm not even pregnant.
No, let's hope not. Any commercials stand out for you? I didn't think it was like a great commercial year. I kind of like the one with the rock stars where the rock stars in the office, Paul Stanley from Kiss and others like, oh, well, hold on. You're not a rock star. Yeah,
that was a good one. That was probably my favorite one, too. That's good to see those guys. But you'd think with all the money that they're spending on these commercials, there'd be better ones. You know what I mean? I mean, like back in the day, I just seemed like the commercials were way better. But, I don't really remember a lot of them. None of them really stood out to me other than the Rockstar one.
Well, that I think that's what's saying that. Because the Rockstar one, you're using famous people, but you're using them in a very specific way. Because we all do that. Oh, someone does a rock star in our office or whatever. And they're like, no, well, hold on. You're just making a PowerPoint presentation. Calm down. You're not a rock star. Versus the other one, that's just like, here's Ben Stiller in a commercial. Ben Stiller wants you to try Pepsi, so you should do it. It's like, all right.
Bradley Cooper. I mean, Ben Affleck. I mean, they. I'll tell you what, they use the stars. That's for sure. But none of them really stood out as far as being a great commercial. I can't wait to see that commercial again.
yeah. Exactly. Last thing, just to go back to the Commanders. So, Rivera talked a bunch during this past week at the Super Bowl. He talked a bunch of us, including me, about what's going on with their plans, including at quarterback. And they're continue to lean into the idea of Sam Howell being the QB1 essentially going into the offseason program. But I, got Rivera to sort of be like, yeah, look, we're not anointing anybody. We'll see who we add, et cetera. If you're in this situation, and I know you only see Sam Howell on the games, you're not with him at practice. To what degree are you feeling comfortable going with Sam Howell as your guy? And then I guess like what level of backup, what level of other quarterback do you think you realistically need to add? Because if you add at too high of a level, then he's not going to start because he's going to get beat out by the veteran. But on the other hand, you don't want necessarily just a pure backup because if you want to push him, so where are you on the Washington's quarterback situation now that the season's over?
It's always been my belief if you're going to have a quarterback start, you have to prepare him now, and you have to get him all the reps and all the work, especially a young kid like Sam Howell. And if he's the guy you're going to anoint or say is your starting quarterback, then you have to let him know that he's a starting quarterback, and it's his job. And that has a lot that helps the quarterback's confidence, where if he throws a bad ball, okay, get out of here. Let's bring in Andy Dalton or whoever the backup quarterback is. And then he'll throw good balls and all the players will be like, ooh, man, this guy's better than our starter. And you have quarterback controversy within. Whereas if you get a veteran guy like Andy, just for instance, who can go in, he's smart and go in and play and win games for you. There's no doubt about that. But you want to give all your reps to Sam Howell. He's got to get all the reps, and the backup has to get his limited reps when it's his turn. You can't have split reps. You can't have three quarterbacks compete. That was our issue my last year when we had Case Keenum. We had Colt McCoy, and we had Dwayne Haskins. We're trying to get all three of them starting reps, and it doesn't. It's not fair for any one of those three guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But neither one of the three guys were really like, oh, my God, he's our starter. It's like, God dang, that's a good throw. Oh, God, that was a terrible throw. Oh, God, that was a good throw. You know what I mean? So there's always a level of doubt with us. We couldn't really pick the starting quarterbacks. We ended up going with Case because Colt was hurt and Dwayne wasn't quite ready, obviously. And Case did some good things, but then he got hurt. But I just think the reps are so important for a young quarterback. Confidence that the coaching staff can instill in that quarterback is critical moving forward And you just have to live with some of the bad plays, and hopefully the guy continues to progress. But he is athletic. He can run. He's got a good arm, but he needs the reps. And the only way to get him to him is announcing him as a starter, if that's the route you want to go.
Jay, you've been great all season. I so appreciate the time. Look, hopefully this isn't the end. They'll be making moves when they figure out their quarterback or their OC or whatever else. Hopefully we can bring you back. I imagine you may take a look at some quarterback tape of these draft prospects as well. So I so appreciate all your time this year, and hopefully we'll keep talking.
All right, Ben. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, man.
Football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.